Welcome to A Correction Podcast. I'm your host, Lev Moscow, and today I'm very excited to be joined by Marina M. Tavares, who is an economist in the research department of the International Monetary Fund. So welcome to the show, Marina.
Hi, Lev. Thank you very much for having me. I'm very happy to be here to talk to you about my work on gender equality and COVID-19 crisis.
Well, I'm very happy that you could be here. So let's get right into it. You co-authored a paper at CEPR or VoxEU that I read. You co-authored it with Vivian Malta and Stefania Fabrizio, and it was entitled COVID-19, A Backward Step for Gender Equality. And I think by now everybody knows what kind of disaster COVID-19 has been. More than 400,000 people have lost their lives worldwide. The global economy is set to shrink by 3% this year. At the same time, the impact has not been distributed evenly. In particular, women have been hit harder. So yeah, it's a big question, but it's the basic question. Why is it that women have been hit so hard, and in which ways have women been impacted by COVID-19 crisis?
One aspect is that it's very important for the crisis, and is very different from previous crises, is that this crisis have hit different sectors of the economy. For example, we saw that in the beginning of the lockdown, what we call social sectors, which are sectors that require face-to-face interaction, like hospitality, retail, restaurants, tourism, no one is traveling, were hit the hardest by the crisis. And it turns out that actually women are the ones that work more on the sectors than men. So when we compare first with the previous global financial crisis, usually what we observe is that men actually are the ones that have higher levels of unemployment during the crisis. Women employment is usually more stable, but this crisis was different. Women unemployment now is higher than men by like 2 percentage points. And another aspect that is very important, and I think now in the fall semester we are all gonna suffer, is that the unpaid burden of housework. So around the world, the women work on average 2.7 more hours than men in the house, like cooking, cleaning. And in long-term countries, something that is very important is fetching water. And during the quarantine periods, many studies have indicated that both men and women are doing more housework, but women are still doing disproportionately more. And now we are coming here to the fall semester. Online schooling we know it's gonna be predominant in the US. For example, a recent New York Times survey found that less than 15% of parents will have their kids returning to school full time. So as a result of that, parents will have to spend more time taking care of the kids, help them with online learning. And unfortunately, we believe that this can lead many women to reduce their hours, even sometimes quit their jobs. And women that became unemployed in the beginning of the pandemic may decide to not look for a job right now. And this is very problematic because dropping out of the labor force for a short period of time can have long-term impact for your career due to loss of promotion, your wages are not growing, you are not contributing to retirement, and you're losing benefits. And this can have a huge impact for women that haven't seen the labor force participation increasing a lot in the last 30 years. For example, in the US in the 80s, female labor force participation was around 51%. Now it's 57%. So it's a big increase, and we're afraid that this period can reduce that.
I had some questions about that. When I was in graduate school in 2002, I remember seeing a chart which showed that by 2020 in the developed economies, the expectation would be that the pay gap between men and women would be completely diminished. And then I saw something recently that sort of flattened out about 10 years ago, and that there's still this persistent gap. And I know it's a little bit outside of the purview of this paper, but am I right in saying that there had been lots of progress, and then we sort of stalled out in the advanced economies in the last decade? Or is that wrong?
No, this is correct. We have seen this year there was a very excellent lecture from an economist named Claudia Golding, that she was actually highlighting that we have broken many barriers in terms of the gender pay gap. We are more in the US, women are more educated than men, like 40% of women have a bachelor degree or more, like a young woman between 25 and 29 years old, while a man is like 32%. But what she talks on her work is that there is a return from jobs that we call jobs that require long hours, jobs that are 24 hours, for example, CEOs that are working Saturday and Sundays, that are working during dinner time. And these type of jobs where returns are very high, where wages are high, are jobs that are not well fitted for a family where two men and women are working, a two earner family. As a result, these like high paid jobs are mostly done by men. And she believes that this is what is letting women still not to close this gender pay gap.
Okay, that makes sense. So I also wanted to know whether there was any difference between, you know, the advanced economies, low income countries, and emerging markets in terms of the female labor force participation rate over the last, you know, 30 years or so.
Yeah, so in emerging markets is also growing. Many countries, Latin America is a country that is doing pretty well. But in low-income countries, it's very different, because in low-income countries, usually female labor force participation is high. But women working in informal sectors or jobs that are not covered by welfare systems or jobs that are unsafe, work in the street. So the quality of the jobs are pretty bad. And as a result, today, what we call is the inverse U-shape of female labor force participation is that in poor countries, females work a lot because they are poor, they need to work. As countries become rich, actually, female labor force participation usually starts to go down. And as you become richer in an advanced economy, female labor force participation is starting to increase again. And I think one thing that it's important to talk about this crisis that is more related to low-income countries is the fact that we are afraid that girls are going to start dropping out of school in low-income countries. And the reason is that, for example, if you take the Ebola crisis in Liberia, where was one of the countries that was affected more for Ebola, After Ebola was over, girls were three times more likely than boys to drop out of school. Mm. And without school, there's just an increase, a permanent loss of human capital, which just perpetuated the cycle of poverty among women and among girls. So this is something that we're really afraid right now, that in low-income countries, as the economy is struggling, as schools are closing, that many girls may end up dropping out of school to help at home and taking care of their younger siblings, or to work in the family field, in the farm. So this is something that we're now looking at it carefully.
So we're going to get to some of the fiscal policies that could address gender equality in a second. I want to talk for 1 minute about what you said before about men doing less work in the house. That seems like that's a cultural issue. It seems maybe a cultural issue everywhere in the world. All cultures share. I don't know if that's true. But it seems like a cultural issue that cannot be fixed by fiscal policy. So yeah, I don't know if you have any ideas about it, but how might we fix that?
Yeah, no, I think it's a culture issue, but I think social norms has changed. You know, there is a very nice recent paper that shows, for example, that when we look at the decline in fertility in low-income countries, a lot of it's accounted by increasing in access to health, increased access to contraception, But this cannot explain everything. Some is because of campaigns, of information, you know? Like people have more information about the benefits, how it's going to change their life. It's the same right now. You know, if you know that your wife can start working and bring income, if you start to help them more at home and internalize that, that can change social norms. And actually, many economists now are, the economists are optimists about the impact of the pandemic can have for gender equality. They believe that for the fact that men and women are at home during this lockdown, and both of them are having to work and help taking care of the kids. The kids are not at school, they are at home. That actually after the pandemic, we can see, we are gonna see a more equal distribution of household work because we spend this time, this period so intense doing this together.
Yeah, that would be exciting. So let's talk about some of the fiscal fixes. What can governments do to reverse the trends that we've seen these last few months?
So governments can do a lot. So one thing that we didn't touch here, but I think it's good to that we need to highlight, is that there is an increase in violence against women. And this increase is because during the lockdown period, for example, violence against women in Nigeria increased 50-60%. And in France, 30%, there is an increase. And even in Argentina, 25%. So this is something that governments should start doing right now. Is, for example, they should make some essential work, some of these essential works that we have during this crisis, for example, to help women that are being affected by violence against, that are being affected by violence, they should keep them as an essential work. For example, France is already doing something about that. They pass a vote and implement a bill to protect the victim of domestic violence. So these are changes that are happening now that we also believe that can have a long-term impact. And they're also extremely important. For example, something that Germany is doing that also could be relevant is to increase transparency, which goes back to what we discussed about gender pay. And this doesn't have any fiscal costs, you know. If you just make the law that firms need to explicitly show what is how much they are paying for men and how much they're paying for women, can reduce the gender gap without any fiscal cost. But of course, that for countries that have space to do fiscal cost, what they should do in advanced economy, and it's something that we are discussing here in the US, is childcare. No? Childcare is extremely expensive in the US. And it's affecting female labor force participation because if you have a young child and you have to pay to child care, you're gonna think about, should I stay at home and take care of my kid? Should I go to work? And sometimes I'm gonna spend almost my entire salary to pay for child care. So subsidizing child care can have a huge benefits for women, can also decline income inequality, and also reduce the gap that happened in early education between kids that are rich and poor and have more resources. Another thing that it's important now that I think this crisis has shown is the need for sick leave and also maternity leave. And these are also that many countries have expanded sick leave and expanded maternity leave for mothers to be able to take a look at, to their kids. And in low-income countries, also what governments have been doing during this period of lockdown, where even informal workers cannot work, is to give them cash transfer programs. And sometimes these cash transfer programs are targeted to mothers of small children. And this also is extremely helpful.
I mean, I guess my question is, how much do you have to convince people that this is not a social democratic project, but that this just makes good economic sense?
So we in the IMF we do this research exactly to to because we believe it's important for economic growth, and we believe that this is actually leaving women behind. And the way that we do this, we are open to our membership, and we go to each country and we give the best policy advice that we can. We look at, in each country, what are the aspects that we believe that governments can help, and depending on where they are lacking, we are giving them support through advice and also through training to try to close this gap. And for example, this childcare aspect was part of when we lend money to countries. And when we lend money to countries, we usually need to make sure that these countries are going to be doing well economically, that the government is having what we call, is able to manage their debt in a sustainable way. Mm-hmm. And part of these programs, we have targets. And for example, for Argentina, we also support that the government spend more on childcare. The same for Jordan. So when we believe that there is a room for improving childcare, and this is going to improve economic productivity and bring in a more diverse workforce to work, which increase productivity and increase economic growth, we do it. But at the end of the day, this is a part of each member country has to make their own decision. You know?
We're starting a book club. We're very excited to announce that the book club will be hosted by Fiori Sarah Hanen, who's a PhD candidate at Brown University in the Department of Anthropology. First in our series of book club meetings will be held October 20th at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we're going to be reading The Sinews of War and Trade, which is a fantastic book. I've just started it. It was written by Lale Khalili, and we think you're going to love it. Please go to our website and fill out a form to reserve a spot. The space is limited to the first 15 people. We've got 12 right now, so there's just a few spots left. And we're asking people to donate $10 to participate. We'll use the money to pay the host for the work. So we look forward to seeing you in October. If you go to Verso right now, you can find that they have a sale on the book. So hurry and get your copy. Thank you. And see you October 20th at 7 p.m.